welcome to the Trek Companion, Episode 1. I am Brian Williams.
I am Adam Caesar.
I'm Stephen Embry.
Today we are going to be discussing the first four episodes of Deep Space Nine. That's Emissary, the two-parter, Man Alone, and Past Prologue. I'd briefly like to discuss the purpose of this podcast as our inaugural episode. We're going to be taking a look at these episodes with hindsight. We're looking at them with contemporary eyes to see what still resonates. We're not so much worried about star dates or names of runabouts, although that can be interesting, and maybe we'll discuss it. But mostly, we're going to be asking, what is the episode really about? Because the best Star Trek has always asked universal questions about the human condition. And those are the things that make the show still worth watching 17 years later. So a couple quick disclaimers. We are going to be mispronouncing people's names. And also, we are assuming you've seen these episodes. If you haven't, of course, we will be spoiling things for you. So a brief discussion of the creation of this series, which was so different from the Treks that came before it and the Treks that would come after. The head of Paramount came to Rick Berman in 1991 and asked him to create a new show. This is why Next Gen, the Star Trek The Next Generation, was still on the air. Deep Space Nine was the only Star Trek show that was on at the same time as another Star Trek show for the duration of its run, first with Next Gen, and then the last half was with Voyager. And those were both a ship in space show. So the idea was to make this show very different from the others. Now, I don't think Rick Berman really set out to create the dramatic, gritty show. He doesn't even like those terms. But by setting it on a space station to make it different from the other shows, by creating characters that would have interpersonal conflict, something that was strictly verboten in the original series and Next Gen, as run by Gene Roddenberry, they ended up creating something that was very different from the other Treks, and that still is very different from the other Treks, but more relevant to our purpose in talking about what these things are really about. They created a show that ended up having a lot of universal meaning and human conflict that is still just as interesting and relevant to us 17 years later.
Emissary, Season 1, Episodes 1 and 2, production numbers 401 and 402. Original air date, Sunday, January 3rd, 1993. Teleplay by Michael Piller. Story by Rick Berman and Michael Piller. Directed by David Carson. Patrick Stewart is the special guest star as Jean-Luc Picard and Locutus of Borg. This episode is the first appearance for most of the principal characters on the show. Avery Brooks as Commander Ben Sisko. Rene Auberjonois as Odo. Colm Meaney as Chief Miles O'Brien. Sarah Clofton as Jake Sisko. Terry Farrell as Lieutenant Jadzia Dax. Armin Shimerman as Quark. Nana Visitor as Major Kira Nerys. And Siddig El-Fadil, later Alexander Siddig, as Dr. Julian Bashir. For the non-principal characters, this is the first appearance for Camille Saviola as Opaka, Felicia Bell as Jennifer, Mark Alamo as Gul Dukat, Max Gradinchik as Rom, Aaron Eisenberg as Nog, and Mark Allen Shepard as the incredibly talkative Morn. This is one of three DS9 events that were originally aired as a two-hour movie and then broken up into two single-hour episodes for subsequent airings. The other two were Way of the Warrior and What You Leave Behind. This episode featured the Borg's only appearance on DS9.
Commander Benjamin Sisko is transferred to Deep Space Nine, a former Cardassian station orbiting the planet Bajor. Sisko meets his crew and other inhabitants of the station. He also meets Kai Opaka on Bajor and learns of the orbs and is given one to take back to the station. Sisko and Dax discover a stable wormhole connecting this part of the space to the Gamma Quadrant, and Kara orders that DS9 be moved to the mouth of the wormhole so that Bajor may lay claim to it. Sisko encounters the Bajoran prophets in the wormhole and converses with them regarding the nature of humanity and linear existence. A battle ensues between Cardassian warships and the station, but it concludes when Sisko emerges from the wormhole with Gul Dukat's ship in tow.
What comes before now is no different than what is now. or what is to come. It is one's existence.
Obviously, this episode is the pilot, so it sets up all of these characters. It sets up their relationship. It sets up the character of the station and the look. But ultimately, what is it really about? So what do you guys think of this episode? What do you think of it by itself? What do you think of it as compared to pilots from the other series?
I'll go ahead. Yeah, personally, I think it's the best opening of all the series. You know, but it's got a lot of intriguing stuff. I mean, you know, if we go back to Generations, you know, it was a little bit campy, you know, special effects wise, production wise, and that's probably because, you know, the show started earlier, obviously, but just story wise, it was very intriguing right from the get-go. And just, you know, that's kind of, it just set the pace for Deep Space Nine for the next 7 years. Very dramatic, as we were talking about in the pre-discussion. It's probably the most dramatic of all the series.
Yeah, that opening sequence when they're pulling Sisko out of the room where Jennifer has died. You know, man, I still feel it. I still feel him every time he hits. Partly, it's great. You know, it's a good dramatic narrative thing. But Avery Brooks is so freaking good.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
You really feel it.
Also, you talk about how good Avery Brooks has also got that kind of feel when he and Patrick Stewart are, you know, going off each other too. They're both, you know, so solid, you know.
And that sequence with him and Patrick Stewart, that's another one of those moments where you're really getting the sense of they're telling you this show is different.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you imagine any time in Next Gen when that line has that he delivers so well? Yes, sir. We've met in battle. I love the way it says battle. By the way,
I mean, yeah. I mean, it wasn't often that somebody stood up that much to Stewart or, you know, Captain Picard.
Exactly. And Picard doesn't even know what to do. He doesn't actually respond.
Well,
he doesn't sit down. He doesn't know what to say.
He has this incredible expression. Really, it's kind of like this. It's because he can never quite forgive himself for what happened during that, even though it was out of his control. And so he has this expression like it's a physical assault, but he can't really blame Sisko for saying that.
Yeah, right. You're spot on. Yeah, I agree.
And that's that was something that I kind of wished would have been done or later on in the show, something between Picard and Sisko, because they set that up so much, that conflict between the two characters. I know they kind of have a little resolution towards the end.
Yeah, you're right. It is an awfully quick wrap up near the tail when they see each other again. Mm-hmm. All you get really is when he says, I'd prefer regarding that what I asked you to do earlier when I asked you to find a replacement for me, I'd prefer if you ignored that. And he says, I'm not sure that I can. That's that one line is about all we get.
Yeah. Logistically, it probably would have been hard to get Stewart to come back to do a show like that. But I think there could have been a really good story there. But, you know, that's something we can all fantasize about.
And, you know, back to the impressions, I get something very different out of this, I think, than when I first saw this. Because I remember seeing this. I came into being a fan of Star Trek in general through The Next Generation primarily. And I grew to appreciate this series more over time as it progressed, and also later. I remember when I first saw this that there were certain things that made me dislike certain characters.
Yeah, it was too different. So,
it was edgy. I mean, when Sisko is saying those things to Picard, and then you get these other individuals that very much are flying in the face of authority and their attitudes and so forth. It kind of was irritating. It's like all this negativity or something.
Yeah, well, what Sisko says to Picard is actually, it's kind of mean, you know?
Yeah.
It's not the understanding, perfect world that we had for 7 years on Next Gen or even the original series, which completely lacked conflict.
Well, it kind of sets it up because, you know, Commander Sisko, Avery Brooks, he's a man in conflict pretty much throughout the entire 7 years. I mean,
yeah, well, he certainly shows his emotions more than any other captain, maybe more than any other series regular.
Well, you think about it, but he's very much a man in conflict. He's a man of two worlds, pretty much, and it very much sets that up in this episode and what he has to deal with. How does he walk the line between Starfleet officer and you know, a prophet or, you know, a spiritual leader, which, you know, he doesn't want to be, and he has to deal with this. And very much a man in conflict throughout the whole series. It's more so because, I mean, it's just the way the show is set up. I mean, they did it brilliantly. The show is about internal conflict. It's more about what's inside than more about what's outside the ship, kind of, I would say. You know, Avery Brooks did a magnificent job showing that through his speech, mannerisms, everything. It's great.
You know, I always wondered, Kyle Paca has that line to Sisko, it is the journey you've been destined to take, when she's telling him he's destined to be the emissary of the prophets. I'm sure they didn't have planned out, day one, what was going to be 7 years later. But, you know, like that he was actually, his birth was ordained or created by the prophets or whatever. But it's interesting, you know, because you can't help but hear lines like that and talk about the journey and the destiny without thinking about where it's all going to go, which is another reason that it's fun to go back and look at these. Mm-hmm. With the hindsight of the series being completed.
Well, it's probably in general a good maneuver by a writer to make bold, fatalistic statements like that. if it doesn't go anywhere, lasts a season or two or whatever, oh, well, that was interesting. Who knows what they're planning? But then if it goes longer, you can go back and say, wow, they're geniuses, you know?
It turns out the latter. They were geniuses.
Well, there are a lot of firsts in this episode, things that really clicked and set stuff up for the subsequent seasons. That scene with Sisko, Quark, and Odo in Odo's office. That's the first time we ever get that Odo and Quark, you know, buddy conflict, enemy friend thing that they did so well for the whole seven seasons.
Mm-hmm. That was fun. And yeah, you see that early on. And of course, the actors, what they did with it as it progressed, you know, I'm sure they had a plan that these two would kind of be adversaries of a sort. But also, I think the actors' performances and how they knew each other and had their history also helped that.
Yeah, well, you know, they tend to like have people, like characters kind of buddy up once they really see where they're going. You know, later we'll get the O'Brien Bashir partnership, but that kind of had to come a little more organically. Yeah, there is a sense that they just knew that Odo and Quark were going to be great for this.
Well, yeah, mm-hmm. So you know, you got, you know, the policeman and the bad guy, pretty much, you know, who are friends in a weird way. It was a good storyline for those two to play off each other.
Well, ultimately, what is this episode about?
I think it's primarily about Sisko and coming to terms with some things, I think, for him. And obviously, in the broader sense, it's a setup for where the series might go. But I think on a personal level, it's that whole notion and things that struck me, for example, towards the end, the whole idea of you carry around these emotions. And in that sense, you go beyond this notion of linear time. I love the sparring between him and the prophets and all that kind of thing. Are we linear beings or not? Well, in the sense that we carry around all our memories and live in those times and so forth, based on our priorities and our emotions and our feelings.
We are the sum of our experiences.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and when he can't get past the loss of his wife, he can't move on.
Right.
Well, yeah, and interesting, you have the other beings in the show, the prophets, who, you know, they don't live linearly, and so it's still hard for me to this day to kind of understand that concept where you live today, yesterday, and tomorrow, all in one existence. And
But that's exactly what happens to Sisko, because he can't move on from the death of his wife. You know, you exist here. You know, he keeps going back to that, and it's him that's taking him back to that moment of the death of his wife.
And it was a very fascinating way to explain the human existence. You know, linearly. You know, maybe it's something that, you know, I think most people, you know, take for granted how we live our lives.
When in 1993, I'm not sure I really. I didn't appreciate it the way I do now. You know, I'm older. I have my own family.
We were just in high school back then. What did we know?
Yeah. You know, I really want to sum up my experiences now. you know? And there are those moments. You know, when you think about every time somebody has that, whatever you call it, when they have an experience with the orb, they're always taken back to these pivotal moments in their life. Sisko, obviously, he's seeing the death of his wife, but he's taken back to the moment when he meets her, when they decide to have a family. Jadzia sees the moment when Curzon died and she became Dax. Mm-hmm. You know,
very pivotal moments in people's lives, their lives, actually.
These experiences define who you are. And I can look back in my life now, and the older I get, the more important those individual moments really are, you know, and the more obvious it is that those things created me and I just didn't understand it at the time.
And that's kind of how memory works. I mean, that's all you end up with. You don't remember verbatim everything that happened in a certain series. The farther back you go, all you have are those highlights, you know, and the orb experiences are kind of like, let's hit the highlight, you know, in a sense for people. So it's just the way they view memory and the way they view the existence. And it's not so straightforward as a linear existence, you know.
Let me pose a couple questions to you guys. These are going to be easy. So in Deep Space Nine,
was there a buzzer here? Wait a minute, is there a timer? Buzzer?
What's the prize?
Do I need to phrase it in the form of a question? What's happening?
these are going to be easy, but in the future I'm going to try to have harder ones. It's just because you know, it's the beginning of the show, so I kind of have to ask these. So Deep Space Nine, Star Trek in general, but Deep Space Nine even more so. Just tons and tons of actors who were played different roles on other Star Treks. And all right, so I'm calling this 359 degrees of DS9. All right, question one. Oh, see, these are so easy. Let's let Caesar try first, because I think this is gonna be too easy for
great. Yeah, put the pressure on me. Yeah, so easy, there's no way you can miss it.
JG Hertzler plays the Vulcan officer on the Saratoga in the opening battle at Wolf 359 in this episode. What recurring character would he later play on Deep Space Nine?
General Martok.
Very good, very good.
Hey, there we are.
This will be another easy one. This one's for Steve here. Armin Shimerman plays Quark, the Ferengi barkeep, on all seven seasons of DS9. What was his first Star Trek role?
He played a Ferengi in the first season of Next Gen, right?
That is correct. He was the first Ferengi anybody ever saw.
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember the name of the character, to be honest with you. Yeah.
I'm not even sure if he had one.
Yeah, probably not. He was Ferengi number three.
No, he was number one. He was the first Ferengi.
He was the lead.
Okay. Caesar, here you go.
All right.
Rene Auberjonois plays Odo, the Bajoran constable in all seven seasons of DS9. What role did he play in Nicholas Meyer's Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country?
I know he was a Starfleet officer. I think he was head of security or something.
That's pretty close.
I don't recall.
I'm afraid I don't remember the name off the top of my head, but he was security admiral that ended up being a bad guy or something, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. He was Colonel West.
Yeah, Colonel West.
Federation traitor. He has that great line about we can clean their chronometers.
Yeah.
About saying they could beat
Doesn't he dress up as a Klingon too? Isn't he the shooter?
Yeah, you're right. He is the shooter. I forgot about that. And Scotty knocks him through the window or something.
Yeah, he's not a very good admiral. You got to find other people to do your dirty work. Shoot people yourself.
All right, final question. I got lost. Whose turn is it?
I guess it'd be mine then.
Your turn. All right, it was an easy one. David Carson directed this episode. The producers were so happy with him. Which Star Trek feature did they ask him to direct?
Generations.
That is correct. He directed Generations the next year.
A Man Alone, Season 1, Episode 4, Production Number 403. Original air date, Sunday, January 17th, 1993. Teleplay by Michael Piller. Story by Gerard Sanford and Michael Piller. Directed by Paul Lynch. This episode is the first appearance on DS9 for Rosalind Chow as Keiko O'Brien and Hannah Hatte as Molly O'Brien. This episode was aired fourth, but was actually the third one shot.
Odo is suspicious of the arrival of where Ubana, a Bajoran convicted of murder and released by the provisional government. Ubana is found dead in a hollow suite, and Odo becomes the prime suspect. Meanwhile, after Jake and Nog get into trouble on the new Promedon, Keiko O'Brien sets up a school, alleviating her feelings of worthlessness on the station. During the investigation, citizens on the station become violent and demonstrate against Odo. Ultimately, it is discovered that Ibana is murdered.
I think it's
Ibadan. Murdered his own clone, and Odo finds and arrests the man.
You don't know me. You have no reason to believe I wouldn't kill Ibadan if it suited my fancy. So don't tell me there isn't some doubt inside of you, some question about whether or not I murdered the man.
So I'm not sure why they switched the airing order and put this one actually after past prologue.
Yeah, unless they wanted to hit everyone up with Lursan Bator right off the bat or something like that. You know what I'm saying? In the next one, but yeah, I don't know why.
Well, we definitely learned that there's a little conflict between Odo and Sisko that, you know, it eventually gets resolved, but they clash a little bit in this episode.
Well, again, that's the kind of thing that's different. Can you imagine, I don't know, who's the security chief on Next Gen, Worf?
Worf, I'm not going to do this.
Yeah. That great scene between Odo and Sisko in Sisko's office. And he says, I don't personally believe it. And he goes, really, how can that be true? You know,
right.
Well, I mean, you know, he's right in saying that there's got to be, you know, if you're going to take me off the case and think I'm a suspect, there's somewhere in there you believe that I could be.
He's like, you don't know me. You know?
Right, which makes sense.
Well, yeah, it definitely sets up Odo as somebody who definitely is a, you know, he the observer of human, he of the human beings. You know, he can see. You know,
I tend to think about Star Trek episodes, you know, from this time period. They're usually like, oh, that's the Odo episode, or that's the Sisko episode, or whatever. And then there's always kind of a B storyline, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure this is so much of an Odo episode, even though it's an investigation of Odo, you know?
Right.
But if there's anything that this episode was about, it's getting to know Odo and his sense of justice. You know, that earlier scene in Sisko's office, right after he wants to kick Ibadan off the station.
Right.
He has that line about justice is justice, and Sisko says, no, you can't get rid of him unless...
You can't just do what you want.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. On that note, I also liked Odo's explanation of a compromise early on in that episode.
He's, They're
observing the O'Briens and how jaded Odo seems already about women getting what they want all the time, that kind of thing.
Yeah, his line about you want to listen to sports jazz and she wants to listen to Klingon opera, you compromise. You listen to Klingon opera. What else? I thought it was really funny how... I don't know if it was supposed to be funny, but each time they go back into sick bay and that growing petri dish is a big pink blob.
Yeah, that was crazy. It was right. Like a horror movie.
Yeah. It's like in a bigger tank every time.
Does anybody else notice this? I mean, so you have this like high-tech hospital on the promenade, and the doors are wide open, and they're just kind of growing a clone out in the open. It's almost like, you know, anybody can just walk by and check out the clone. It's not like, you know, like a normal hospital where it'd be like closed behind secure doors or something.
But it's almost like it's for sale behind the glass.
Like just set up the display window or something, you know. There it is. Like, come on, all the kids come see it. Or they set up a school, maybe have a field trip, you know.
Well, that is something else they do in this episode. Is they set out a whole school storyline that they're going to pay off. That was the end of the first season, right? When they have that big thing with Kai Winn, when you really come to hate her. I think that's the end of this season. So it's pretty quick here. Mm-hmm. That they do that. So if there was any one thing that the episode was about, to me, it would be the sense of justice. You have Odo's speeches or monologues about justice, and we get a sense of his sense of justice, which doesn't necessarily jive with the Federation, but it is something he holds incredibly dear to his. There's the scene, and everyone else thinks that way too. There's that scene when Sisko is talking about relieving him of his duties, and Kira says there's not a more honorable person on this station. And later, there's also the scene where Sisko is trying to disband the crowd, and he's talking about, you have a messed up sense of justice, and an hour from now, you're going to regret what you're doing here today. So if there's anything that it seems like it's trying to discuss is the difference between kind of our emotional sense of justice and our you know, what our brains tell us justice should be. I think this one might be an example. If we're talking about in Emissary how well they succeeded at asking these questions for what that episode was about. In this episode, if that's what it's about, for as enjoyable a murder mystery as it is, and that stuff really is fun, and we get more of that later, you know, with Odo's investigations and things. Maybe it felt like they spent a little too much time on that and not as much on those questions about justice for me. I don't know.
Right. And I also think that they tried to mix in a little bit of don't judge a book by its cover, you know, with the whole mobs after Odo and that type of stuff. And look, he's just don't judge him just because he's different.
He's different.
And that might have muddied the waters up a little bit with that kind of stuff too, you know?
Yeah. So maybe it was reaching too many different directions and just didn't really grab any of them specifically.
Right. Right.
I can't forget my two questions here.
Oh, yes.
59 degrees of Deep Space Nine. All right. Man Alone. Let me see. Who's going to get which? Okay. All right. Caesar.
All right.
Max Grodinchik has a recurring role as the Ferengi Rom, Quark's brother. He previously played a different Ferengi, Sovok, in what episode of Star Trek The Next Generation?
Oh yeah, you get questions are getting harder. I have no idea. I'm not even going to pretend.
I'll give you a hint. It was on the planet Ryza.
Dude, I'm sorry. It's been longer since I've watched Next Gen than
this. Switching over, Mr. Embry.
Captain's Holiday.
You got it.
It's
the one with Vosh.
Yes.
Yeah, you should have said Vosh.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that would have helped.
Aaron Eisenberg plays Rom's son, Nog. In the second season episode of Star Trek Voyager, Initiations, Eisenberg plays Kar, a Kazon, trying to complete a rite of passage ritual by doing what?
I remember that, vaguely. By doing what? It's escaped me. I don't remember exactly what he was trying to do.
It has to do with Chakotay.
Yeah, I remember he was involved. Yes. Kill him? I don't know.
That is correct.
Oh, great. Past Prologue, Season 1, Episode 3, Production Number 404. Original air date, Sunday, January 10th, 1993. Written by Catherine Powers. Directed by Winrick Colby. This episode is the first appearance for Andrew Robinson as Garak. It also featured the Duras sisters, Lursa and Vator, from TNG, played by Barbara March, and Gwyneth Walsh, who would meet their demise in the David Carson-directed Star Trek Generations a year later. This episode was the fourth one shot, but it actually aired third. This explains visual inconsistencies, such as Kira's hairstyle and Odo's makeup, which appear as they did in the pilot instead of the new look introduced in A Man Alone.
Tantalos, a former Bajoran freedom fighter, requests and receives asylum on the station. Kira's loyalties come into question as she is torn between helping Tana achieve his objectives and keeping Sisko informed. The Klingon sisters, Lursa and Vator, arrive on the station planning to sell an explosive to Tana. Bashir learns of the plan through his alliance with Garak, and Kara assists in stopping Tana from achieving his objective of destroying the entrance to the wormhole.
It sounds like you're trying to talk yourself into something. Or out of something.
Either way, I have to betray someone.
I love Garak.
Oh, yes.
Garak is my favorite fictional character of all time, for any show, any book, anything.
That's a bold statement.
It is. Wow. I'll take him over James Bond any day of the week. I love him. And half of it is the writing, and the other half is Andy Robinson. He's so freaking good. I love him.
Right.
I love him.
right from the start, he's interesting. I mean, immediately, yeah. It's like, what's going on here? What is this guy, you know?
Yeah, it's very, very awkward between him and Bashir there. You get to see it on Bashir's face. Well, you know what's fun? Going forward, we also get to see, you know, how Sisko, I was watching this episode last night, and I know this is jumping forward a little bit ahead, but it just, I thought it struck me because, like, when him and Kira are walking down the promenade, and he just grabs her by the arm and swings her around and just starts yelling at her. I'm like, damn.
What are your priorities? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, that's another, like, one of those things where, hey, this is not your father's Star Trek or whatever. You know, this is not the original series. This is not next gen.
I mean, because we would always see Picard. I mean, it's actually more Kirk. Kirk was a little bit more, you know, I'll manhandle you if I have to, but we never saw that from Picard. Yeah, Picard would yell at you and be grumpy, but yeah, never put his hands on anybody.
But then also the way that she's talking to him, like right before they go in there to see tunnels.
Yeah.
You know, and she's she kind of shouts at him, and then what does she do? There's no, like, all right, that's enough, or, you know, a moment where she composes herself and then has a kinder line or something. No, she shouts at him and then she stomps right in. She leaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, he talks to a Starfleet commander that way and then walks away.
Well, I mean, that's it, set up that way. You would never see that from just the way they set it up, because she's Bajoran, he's, you know, human. So, you know, they can do that and get away with that. Initial conflict with them, those two, at least in the first season.
And the way it's set up too, with their different affiliations, the Bajoran Provisional Government and Starfleet, and there's a slight amount of ambiguity. I mean, even though it's clear,
Kira even more so reports
they don't trust each other really. I mean, you know, well, you
even see more it, so right? Because now you've got factions within the Bajorans. You know, he's Kon Ma, and the Bajorans aren't down with that.
Yes,
you know, Tantalos is Kon Ma. I mean, so you've got. It's even harder. So if we jump to what to me this episode's about, right? This is about she's not choosing between the Federation and the Bajorans. It's much more difficult than that. She's choosing between Bajorans and Bajorans. You know, she's choosing between the Provisional Government and Kon Ma.
Yes,
you know,
and civilization and history is full of that kind of thing where it's not so clear cut. Rarely is it, you go with good or bad or, you know, evil or whatever. It's, things are changing, and what does it mean to be, loyal to my people? Does it mean to go with what this guy's doing, or does it mean to go with, you know, working with the Federation for the long-term betterment of my people, you know? And she struggles with those notions.
Well, yeah, these are real questions, because you don't know what the future holds. You know, you don't really know which is the right choice and which is the right side. You know, some of the time dramatic programming, like say Star Trek, dramatic flaw, it is Star Trek. And we know that at the end of the episode, I don't know, Sisko isn't going to die at the end of the fourth episode in season one. You know, there's a level that we always know it's going to something to an extent. It's always going to kind of be okay, but in this show, they try to give us enough B characters. They try to give us enough. And I don't mean B as in less important. I mean B as in, you know, not the principals.
Well, the secondary characters.
Things can happen to these people. Yeah, secondary characters. Things can happen to these people, or the, in a way, the entire planet of Bajor could go there. So. They are tough questions, and you're right. These are not the kind of things that are so, you know, in the real world, things are never so black and white. She has that line about, it was so much easier when I knew who the enemy was. And that from that point of view, war is rather simple, you know. But this new path that she has chosen is way more complicated and way more complex, and requires a level of evolution in her being that she wasn't ready to make. And that's what it's really about. However, I just like Garrick. And I just want to see more of Garrick.
Yeah, you just like Garrick. I mean, you know, there'll be more Garrick speak to come. More Garrick love for Brian.
So if we broke this episode down into one scene, for me it would be the scene with Odo and Kira in Odo's office that I just talked about a little bit about earlier, where she decides to go with the provisional government and Sisko.
Yes. Yes.
And then, you know, at the end, that last moment in the episode when she has a moment with Tanalos, and she just tells him the old ways don't work anymore. And that's when she's really, you know, she's okay with the decision that she made, you know, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You guys ready to play your last 359 degrees of DS9 for the day?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's see. Susan Bay plays Admiral Roman in this episode. That's the admiral that Kira calls, goes over his head.
You're right.
Sisko's head. You make an end run around my head again, and I'll have yours on a platter. It's a good line. What Trek actor is Susan Bay married to in real life?
You're
going to kick yourself for not knowing this one.
Is the actor in Deep Space Nine?
It is not an actor in Deep Space Nine, no.
I don't know.
Brent Spiner. He's been married for over 20 years. Who? You had a guess? Who? When?
I said Brent Spiner. That's my guess.
No. Mr. Embry, do you have a guess?
Leonard Nimoy.
That is correct. Okay, Von Armstrong, who plays Dinar in this episode, has played no less than a dozen different Trek characters between Next Gen, DS9, Voyager, and Enterprise. His first character was on The Next Generation. It was episode 20. What species was he? Bonus points if you know the character's name.
I'm pretty hazy on it, to be honest with you. I'm just going to guess Klingon.
You got it.
Hey.
I didn't want to give you the... If I give you the name of the episode, it was Heart of Glory. He played Klingon Commander for us. Yeah. Yeah, if I'd given you the name of the episode, you would have gotten it too easily.
Well, there you go.
You can visit us on the web at trekcompanion.com. That's T-R-E-K companion.com. And you can email us at trekcompanion@gmail.com. So thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.